Others, who were not masons by trade, have since learned the spirit methods of building, for the sheer joy of doing so, and they give valuable aid to their more skilled confreres. The masons, and one other, are the only people concerned in the actual construction, since spirit buildings do not require much that has to be included within the disposition of earthly buildings. Such, for example, as the necessary provision for lighting by artificial means, and for heating. Our light comes from the great central source of all light, and the warmth is one of the spiritual features of the realm. The addition which was being made to the library consisted of an annex, and it was not of any very great dimensions. Our spirit library has at least one feature in common with earthly libraries. A time comes when the quantity of books exceeds the space in which to house them, and in our case the excess is inclined to be greater, because not only do we have copies of earthly books upon the shelves, but there are also volumes that have their source solely in spirit. By this, I mean that such books have no counterpart on earth. Included among them are works concerning spirit life alone, the facts of life here, and spiritual teachings, written by authorities who have an infallible knowledge of their subject, and who reside in the higher spheres. There are also the histories of nations and events, with the facts set down in strict accordance with the absolute truth, written by men who now find that equivocation is impossible. The building of this annex was not, therefore, what one would denominate a major effort, and it required the help of but a comparative few. It was simple in design, consisting of two or three medium-sized rooms. We were standing fairly close to the group of architects and masons, beaded by the ruler of the realm. I noticed particularly that they had all the appearance of being extremely happy and jovial, and many were the jokes that circulated round this cheerful band. It was strange to Ruth and me, Edwin had witnessed this sort of thing before, to think that a building was shortly to go up, because since my arrival in the spirit world I had seen no signs of any building operations going on anywhere. Every hall and house was already erected, and it never occurred to me that anything further would be required in this direction. A little thought, of course, would have revealed that spirit houses are always in course of being built, while others are being demolished if they are no longer wanted. The halls of learning all looked so very permanent to my unaccustomed eyes, so very complete, that I could not think it would ever be necessary to make any additions to them. At length there were signs that a beginning was to be made. It must be remembered that the act of building in the spirit world is essentially an operation of thought. It will not be surprising, therefore, when I tell you that nowhere were there to be seen the usual materials and paraphernalia associated with earthly builders, the scaffolding and bricks and cement, and the various other familiar objects. We were to witness, in fact, an act of creation by thought, and as such no physical equipment is necessary. The ruler of the realm stepped forward a few paces, and, with his back towards us, but facing the site upon which the new wing was to arise, he spoke a brief but appropriate prayer. In simple language he asked the great Creator for his help in the work they were about to undertake. 81 His prayer brought an instantaneous response, which was in the form of a bright beam of light that descended upon him and upon those gathered immediately behind him. As soon as this happened, the architects and masons moved up close beside him. All eyes were now turned upon that vacant spot beside the main building, to which we noticed that a second beam of light was passing directly from the ruler and the masons. As the second beam reached the site of the annex, it formed itself into a carpet of coruscation upon the ground. This gradually grew in depth, width, and height, but it seemed, as yet, to lack any suggestion of substance. It matched the main building in color, but that was all so far. Slowly the form gained in size until it reached the required height. We could now see plainly that it matched the original structure in general outline, while the carved devices similarly corresponded. While it was in this state, the architects approached and examined it closely. We could observe them moving within it, until at length they passed from view. They were gone but a moment when they returned to the ruler with a report that all was in order. Edwin explained to us that this rather ghostly edifice was in reality an adumbration of the finished structure, shaped in exact facsimile before an intensification of thought was applied to produce a solid and completed building. Any mistake or fault would be detected when the building was in this tenuous state, and corrected at once. No rectification, however, being necessary to this particular instance, the work was proceeded with immediately. The downstream of light now became very much more intense, while the horizontal stream from the ruler and his collaborators assumed, after the lapse of a minute or two, a similar degree of intensity. We could now perceive the nebulous form acquiring an unmistakable appearance of solidity as the concentration of united thought laid layer upon layer of increased density upon the simulacrum. From what I observed, it seemed to devolve upon the ruler to supply to each of the masons just that quantity and description of force that each required upon his separate task. He acted, in fact, as a distributive agent for the magnetic power that was descending directly upon him. This split up into a number of individual shafts of light of different color and strength, which corresponded with his direct appeals to the great architect. There was no faltering or diminution of the application of thought substance to be perceived anywhere. The masons themselves seemed to work with a complete unanimity of concentration, since the building attained full solidity with a remarkable degree of evenness. After what appeared to Ruth and me a very short period, the building ceased to acquire any further density, the vertical and horizontal rays were cut off, and there stood before us the finished wing, perfect in every detail, an exact match and extension to the main edifice, beautiful alike in color and form, and worthy of the high purpose to which it was to be devoted. We moved forward to examine more closely the results of the feat that had just been accomplished. We ran our hands over the smooth surface, as though to convince ourselves that it was really solid. Ruth and I were not the only people to do this, as there were others who were witnessing for the first time, and with equal wonderment, the immense power of directed thought. 82. The procedure which governs the building of our personal houses and cottages differs a little from that which I have just described to you. An indispensable prerequisite to the ownership of a spirit home is the right to own it, a right which is gained solely by the kind of life we live when incarnate, or by our spiritual progression after our transition to the spirit world. Once we have earned that right, there is nothing to prevent our having such a residence if we should wish for one. It has often been said that we build our spirit homes during our earthly lives, or after. That is so only in a broad sense. What we have built is the right to build, for it requires an expert to erect a house that would justify the name. My own home was built for me during my earthly life by builders just as proficient as those who helped to erect the annex to the library. My friends, headed by Edwin, had looked after all the details entailed in such work. They had sought out the men to undertake the task, and the latter had carried into effect a fine piece of craftsmanship. When that day shall dawn upon which my spiritual progression will carry me onwards, I shall leave my house. But it will rest entirely with myself whether I leave my old home as it stands for others to occupy and enjoy, or whether I demolish it. It is customary, I am told, to make a gift of it to the ruler of the realm for his disposal to others at his discretion. 4. Time and space. It is commonly thought by people of the earth plane that in the spirit world time and space do not exist. That is wrong. We have both, but our conception of them differs from that of the earth world. We sometimes use the phrase, before the dawn of time, to convey an idea of the passage of eons of time, but we have no notion of what is really embodied in that phrase. On the earth plane, the measurement of time had its source in the revolution of the earth upon its axis, giving a division of time known to us as night and day. The recurrence of the four seasons gave that larger measure, during which the earth revolved around the sun. The invention of clocks and calendars brought a convenient means of measuring time within the reach of all of us. In the spirit world, we have no clocks or other mechanical contrivances to indicate the passage of time. It would be the simplest thing in the world for our scientists to provide us with such if we felt the need for them. but we have no such need. We have no recurrent seasons, no alternations of light and darkness as external indications of time, and, in addition, we have no personal reminders, common to all the incarnate, of hunger and thirst and fatigue, together with the aging of the physical body. How, then, can we have any possible heed of the flight of time? How, in fact, does time exist at all? We have two conceptions of time, one of which, as upon the earth plane, is purely relative. 5 minutes, let us say, of acute pain suffered by the physical body will so 83 affect the mind that the passing moments will seem an age. But 5 minutes of intense joy and happiness will seem to have flown with the rapidity of same number of seconds. Those of us in the spirit world who live in the realms of happiness and perpetual summer will have no cause to find time heavily. In this sense we are simply not conscious of the flight of time. In the dark realms the reverse is the case. The period of darkness will seem interminable to those who live there. However such souls may yearn for a coming of the light, yet it never comes to them. They themselves must perforce take the first step, the light that awaits them without the low realm. A period of existence within these dark regions, amounting to nothing more than a year or two of earthly time, will seem like an eternity to the sufferers. If, normally, we have none of the customary means of measuring time because we have no need to do so, we can, and we do return to make contact with the earth plane, where we ascertain the exact time of day, the day of the year, and the year itself. Some people, who would not otherwise have done so, return to the earth world for the very purpose of satisfying their curiosity as to the number of years they have been in spirit world. I have spoken to some who have made this journey and they were all amazed to discover the unsuspected scores of years that had passed by since their transition. Speaking for myself, I have found the time pass rapidly since I came into spirit, but I have always known, throughout the whole of that period, what was the year of the Christian era. The reason in my own case was simply that I had been promised that I should one day be able to communicate with the earth world. I had therefore, been keenly interested in watching, in company with the great souls who were closely concerned, the concatenation of events that were to lead, among other things, to the achiever of my wish. Edwin, who met me upon the threshold of the spirit world, conducted me to my new home, was similarly acquainted with passage of time, for he, in turn, had been watching me. It may be thought that time, in the sense of being a measured succession of existence, has little or no influence beyond the earth plane. But it most certainly does have an influence upon the spirit plane. All earthly events, whether concerning nations or individuals, are subject to, or governed by, time. And in so far as those events have their application to, or extension into, the spirit world, so do we in the spirit world come under the influence of time, or its operation. We might take the festival of Christmas as the simplest and readiest example. We celebrate this festival in the spirit world at the same time as do you. Whether December 25th is the correct date, historically, for the event which it commemorates, is a question we are not concerned with for our present purposes. What matters is that the two celebrations, yours and ours, are synchronized and recurrent year by year. We are not subservient to the earth world in this, our purpose is solely one of cooperation. In normal times upon the earth plane at that period of the year, there rises throughout the earth world a great force of goodwill and kindliness. Many people, who at other seasons are inclined to be forgetful, will frequently remember those of their family and friends who have passed into spirit lands, and they will send them thoughts of affection which we in spirit are always so happy to receive and to reciprocate. The celebration of Christmas is always preceded by thoughts of pleasant anticipation. If there were nothing else to guide us, these alone would be sufficient to tell us that the time of the feast was drawing 84 near. In the spirit world, at that time, it is common enough to hear one person say to another, "Christmas on the earth plane is drawing near." But the person so addressed might have been completely unaware of the fact. In the particular example of Christmas, we are not dependent entirely upon the earth plane for our knowledge of the approaching anniversary. On this special occasion, we are always visited by great souls from the higher realms, and were all other means to fail us, this would be an infallible indication of the passing of another year in earthly time. Those of us who are in close and constant connection with the earth will know, of course, as well as do you, the year, the month, and the day. We shall know, too, the exact hour of earth time. There is no difficulty about this, nor is there any mystery. When we come into your conditions, we can make use of the very means that you yourselves employ, and what could be simpler? As a rule, it is not necessary for us to be continually aware of the precise day and hour, or otherwise to keep account of them. When we actively cooperate with you, your thoughts to us are sufficient indication that a certain moment has recurred when we meet to work or converse together. Such thoughts are all that we need. It is in the ordinary nature of things in spirit that, generally speaking, we should lose all sense of the continuity of time in measured succession as you know it. We allow things to remain so, unless we have cause to do otherwise. When we look forward to the arrival of relative or friend into the spirit world, it is towards the event that we cast our minds, not the year in which the event is to take place. Thus far I have given you a few facts of my own knowledge derived from my own experience, and therefore what I have told you applies to the specific realm wherein I live. Of the higher realms I have no knowledge at first hand, and the amount of information that I have gleaned from conversations with inhabitants of those realms has been governed and restricted by my ability to understand. All that I can say, therefore, concerning time in the upper spheres is that in such elevated states we come into realms where knowledge, among many other spiritual attributes, is of a very high order. Personages from those realms have more than astonished me with the accuracy of their foreknowledge of events that were to take place upon the earth plane. Their means of acquiring this information is far beyond the comprehension of us in this realm. It is sufficient for the moment to record that it is so, and that time, therefore, is not confined to realms of a less exalted state of spiritual progression. When we come to the subject of space, we find that, broadly speaking, we are governed up to a point by the same law as upon the earth plane. We have eternity of time, but we have also infinity of space. Space must exist in the spirit world. Take my own realm alone, as an example. Standing at the window of one of the upper rooms of my house, I can see across huge distances whereon are many houses and grand buildings. In the distance I can see the city with many more great buildings. Dispersed throughout the whole wide prospect are woods and meadows, rivers and streams, gardens and orchards, and they are all occupying space, just as all these occupy space in the earth world. They do not interpenetrate any more than they interpenetrate upon the earth plane. Each fills its own reserved portion of space. And I know, as I gaze out of my window, that far beyond the range of my vision, and far beyond and beyond that again, there are more realms and still more realms that constitute the designation infinity of space. I know that I can travel uninterruptedly through enormous areas of space, areas far greater than the whole of the earth world trebled in size, or greater. I have not yet traversed anything like one fraction of the full extent of my own realm, but I am free to do so whenever I wish. I have been told by good friends from the higher realms that I could penetrate even those rarefied states if occasion demanded. I should be given the facilities and the protective cloak that are necessary in such cases to make the journey, so that, potentially, my field of movement is gigantic. Viewed with earthly eyes only, this immense region would obviously be beyond the reach of most people, since movement through such spaces on Earth would be restricted by the means of transportation at their command, as well as by other considerations. 1,000 miles of earthly space is a great distance, and to cover it takes some considerable time if the slower means of transport are employed. Even with the fastest method, a certain time must elapse before the end of the 1,000 miles journey is reached. But in the spirit world thought alters the whole situation. We have space, and we have a certain cognizance of time in its relation to space. Thought can annihilate time in its relation to space, but it cannot annihilate space. I can stand before my house and I can bethink myself that I would like to visit the library in the city which I can see some miles away in the distance. No sooner has the thought passed with precision through my mind than I find myself, if I so desire it, standing before the very shelves that I wish to consult. I have made my spirit body, and that is the only body I have. I travel through space with the rapidity of thought, and that is so rapid that it is equivalent to being instantaneous. And what have I done? I have covered the intervening space instantaneously, but the space still remains there with everything it contains, although I had no cognizance of time or the passage of time. When I have completed my visit to the library, I meet some friends upon the steps, and they suggest that we adjourn to the home of one of them. With this pleasant prospect in view, we decide to walk through the gardens and woods. The house is some distance away, but that does not matter, because we never suffer from physical fatigue, and we are not otherwise engaged. We walk along together, talking happily, and after a certain lapse of time we arrive at the house of our friend, and we have covered the intervening space on foot. On the journey from my house to the library, I overcame the distance in between, and I dispensed with time for the occasion. On the way back, I experienced an intuitive apprehension of time by walking slowly, and I restored a perception of distance to my mind by moving upon the solid ground in the grassy fields of this realm. Time, in its spirit sense, and space are relative in the spirit world, just as they are upon the earth plane. But our conceptions of them differ widely, yours being restricted by the earthly considerations of sunrise and sunset, and the various modes of transit. We have everlasting day, and we can move ourselves slowly by walking, or we can transport ourselves instantaneously whithersoever we wish to be. In the spirit world, time can thus be made to stand still. And we can restore our sense of it by quietly resting, or by walking. It is only our general sense of time that we restore, not the passage of time. But when we receive your thoughts from the earth world, telling us that you are ready for us to come to you, then, once again, we are fully aware of the passage of earth time. And you must admit that we are invariably punctual in keeping our appointments with you. 86v. Geographical position. What is the geographical position of the spirit world in relation to the earth world? Many people have wondered this at different times, and I include myself among the many. And that leads to a further question concerning the disposition of other realms than those of which I have given you some details. I have told you how, when I had reached a critical moment, I lay upon my final bed of earthly sickness, I at length felt an irresistible urge to rise up, and that I yielded to that urge easily and successfully. In this particular case, the line of demarcation was very fine between the end of my earthly life and the beginning of my spirit life, because I was in full possession of my senses, fully conscious. The actual transition from one world to the other was in this respect imperceptible. But I can narrow things down still further by recalling that there came a moment when the physical sensations attendant upon my last illness left me abruptly, and in place of them a delightful feeling of bodily case and peace of mind completely enveloped me. I felt that I wanted to breathe deeply, and I did so. The impulse to rise from my bed, and the passing of all physical sensations, mark the instant of my physical death and my birth into the world of spirit. But when this took place, I was still in my own earthly bedroom, and therefore a part, at least, of the spirit world must interpenetrate the earth world. This particular experience will give something of a point of departure for our geographical explorations. The next event in my transition was the arrival of my good friend Edwin, and our meeting after the lapse of years. The meeting took place seemingly in the bedroom. Then, after we had greeted each other and chatted for a brief space, Edwin proposed that we should depart from our present surroundings, which, in the circumstances, were rather doleful. He took me by the arm, told me to close my eyes, and I felt myself gently moving through space. I had no clear perception of direction. I only knew that I was traveling, but whether up or down or horizontally, it was impossible for me to say. Our rate of progress increased until at last I was told to open my eyes, and then I found myself standing before my spirit home. Since that day I have learned many things, and one of my first lessons was in the art of personal locomotion by other means than walking. There are immense distances here to cover, and sometimes we need to cover them instantly. We do so by the power of thought, as I have already outlined to you. But the strangest thing to me, at first, was the fact that when I moved myself through space at any greater speed than ordinary walking, I found that I had no sense of absolute direction, but one of movement only. If I chose to shut my eyes whilst traveling with moderate speed, I merely shut out the scenery, or whatever else were my surroundings. It must not be thought that it is possible to lose one's way. That would be out of the question. This absence of a sense of direction in no way interferes with our initial thought function in personal locomotion. Once we have determined to journey to a certain place, we set our thoughts in motion and they, in turn, instantaneously set our spirit bodies in motion. One might almost say it requires no thinking about. I have spoken to other people on these matters, and compared notes generally. It is a thing we all do when we are newly arrived in the spirit world, and we never lack willing friends to help us in our early 87 difficulties. I have found that it is common to all here in spirit, this absence of any directional perception when moving rapidly. Of course, when we travel instantaneously, there is no time to observe any object whatsoever. There is no observable interval of time between the moment we leave for, and the moment we arrive at, our destination. It will be appreciated from this factor of directional unawareness, if I may so term it, that to assign a precise location to the spirit world, relative to the earth world, is a difficult matter. Indeed, I doubt if anyone fairly new to spirit life could possibly hazard a guess as to his relative geographical position. Of course, there are scores upon scores of people who never bother their heads about such things. They have severed all connection with the earth world, and they have done with it for all time. They know positively that they are alive and in the spirit world, but as to the exact position of that world in the universe, they have no intention of troubling themselves. But our own case is different. I am in very active communion with the earth world, and I think it would be of interest if I were to try to give some idea just where the spirit lands are situated. The spirit world is divided into spheres or realms. These two words of designation have passed into current acceptation among most of those on the earth plane who have a knowledge of and practice communication with our world. In speaking to you thus, I have used the words interchangeably. They suffice for our purpose. One can think of none better. These spheres have been given numbers by some students, ranging from the first, which is the lowest, up to the seventh, the highest. It is customary among most of us here to follow this system of numbering. The idea originated, I am told, from our side, and it is a very useful and convenient method of conveying the information of one's position upon the ladder of spiritual evolution. The spheres of the spirit world are ranged in a series of bands forming a number of concentric circles around the earth. These circles reach out into the infinity of space, and they are invisibly linked with the earth world in its lesser revolution upon its axis and, of course, in its greater revolution round the sun. The sun has no influence whatever upon the spirit world. We have no consciousness of it at all, since it is purely material. An exemplification of the concentric circles is afforded us when we are told that a visitant from a higher sphere is coming down to us. He is relatively above us, spiritually and spatially. The low realms of darkness are situated close to the earth plane and interpenetrate it at their lowest. It was through these that I passed with Edwin when he came to take me to my spirit home. And it was for that reason that he recommended that I keep my eyes firmly closed until he should tell me to open them again. I was sufficiently alert, too much so, because I was fully conscious, otherwise, to see some of the hideousness that the earth world has cast into these dark places. with the spirit world made up of a series of concentric circles, having the Earth world approximately at the center. We find that the spheres are subdivided laterally to correspond broadly with the various nations of the Earth, each subdivision being situated immediately over its kindred nation.